Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's podcast. With us today is Shelley Bloom, Director of Legislative Awareness and Training. And today's topic will be on From Cobra to PCORI, Summer Legislative Updates and More. So, Shelley, we are a month into summer, and we're filled with the usual heat and humidity and storms and more regulations and legislative updates. So, everyone, we have a lot of ground to cover, and we'll start with our first question. So, Shelley, the end of July means reporting time. Can you remind us what is due very soon?
Hi, Jim. It's good to be with you again. And yes, I can certainly give you updates. July 31st is the end of a quarter. So with that, we have second quarter filing for Form 720, which is our PCORI filing. PCORI is the Patient-Centered Outcomes Research Institute fee, started all the way back in 2012. Was recently reauthorized for another 10 years. So the filing is due July 31st. That's for any group that is level funded or self-funded, and also for health reimbursement arrangements, which are in fact self-funded plans. Even though they might be connected with a fully insured plan, the employer does need to do the PCORI filing for the HRA as it stands by itself. So those are all due actually August 2nd this year because July 31st is a Saturday. Also, we have Form 5500 filings. Anybody that has a plan that renews on a calendar year, so January 1 through December 31, your Form 5500 filing is due 7 months after the end of your plan year. So that would be July 31st. Those are informational returns for any employer that has 100 or more participants in a plan. They need to do that Form 5500 filing. And we are at the end of a quarter, so it would be the 941 quarterly filing. This would be for the FFCRA, the Family First Coronavirus Response Act. So if you are voluntarily participating in FFCRA, it's time to do your quarterly filing and get back some of your taxes. Also, we're in the midst of COBRA subsidy, and you're going to use that same 941 form to get some tax break and get your taxes back for the subsidy that you have already paid out. So lots of things that are coming due at the end of July.
The COBRA subsidy, we've been talking about that a lot these last few months. How about a quick reminder on dates, eligibility, forms, and tax credit?
Yes, we have been talking a lot about COBRA subsidy, but it still continues to come up. So just as a reminder for everybody, COBRA subsidy allows people that are eligible for COBRA, and if they are involuntarily terminated from their job or if they are separated from their job due to a reduction in hours, they could be eligible for the COBRA subsidy. It began April 1st. It ends September 30th. So if you are laid off from your job anytime from April 1 through September 30, you would be eligible for the subsidy as long as it is that involuntary termination or reduction. Also, if you are eligible for other group health insurance or if you are eligible for Medicare, that takes away your opportunity to take advantage of the subsidy. We're also looking backward to people who may have been offered COBRA, looking backward roughly 18 months. A lot of COBRA third-party administrators have already got that information to the employer. The forms were supposed to go out by the end of May. There are new COBRA forms that were issued in May that you use only during this subsidy period. So it is time to be making sure that not only did you do everything you needed to do looking backward, but that for anybody that is currently being terminated or laid off from their job, that you're giving them this opportunity for the COBRA subsidy. The employer forwards the money, they pay it on behalf of the former employee, and then they claim that reimbursement from the federal government on their Form 941 on their Medicare section of their payroll taxes. Now, the little twist to all of this and what we had been waiting for was about mini COBRA or state continuation. So it's a little bit different how the mini COBRA or state continuation is administered. There is no look back period with state continuation. So if you're currently on mini COBRA or state continuation or you're newly eligible, you can take advantage of COBRA subsidy. But if you may have been eligible 3 or 4 months ago and you did not enroll, there's no opportunity to go back and pick that up. Also, from the mini COBRA perspective, the insurance carrier is going to front the money, not the employer. So there are reporting pieces that need to go to the carrier so that the carrier can properly claim the credit for this and make the payments on behalf of that former employee. Each carrier has slightly different regulations that you need to follow. I believe we now have all of them. So if you're not sure, then definitely work with your account manager or your account executive to get the proper information you need from the insurance carrier to get those mini COBRA or state continuation forms done. Otherwise, all of the federal COBRA forms are on the IRS website, the DOL website, that you can pull down and use.
Now, child care tax credits started last week. Can you give us a brief explanation on the program?
Yes, I can. Child care tax credits are something very important, something that was rolled out under the Biden administration. It pays up to $300 per month for each child that is under the age of six, $250 a month for children from the ages of 6 to 17. They are paying this out based on the income on the 2020 tax return. If you didn't have a 2020 tax return yet filed, they can go back and look at the 2019 tax return. But it's an opportunity to get more money in the hands of parents that are low income. So we're looking at individuals or a married couple that has an income of less than $150,000. They could be eligible to receive these tax credits. You can get a monthly amount of that $250 or $300, or you can choose to wait and just get a tax credit at the end of the year when you file your taxes. We do have some special events that IRS has planned in Paterson, New Jersey, in Newark, New Jersey, in Bronx, New York, are three of them that I'm aware of. And these are events that IRS has special people there to help get that 2020 tax return done, to help get the tax credits in the hands of people that are such low income that they don't have to file a tax return. So look for those in your area, and it definitely will be a way for those that really need these credits to get the credits into their hands as soon as possible. It's also going to help them from the economic impact payments. These are the payments that have come from Congress to the American public. And if you haven't filed a tax return in the last year or two, you may not have gotten those economic impact payments. So when they have these meetings or you can call a special number, that may get you those economic payments into the hands of those that need it sooner rather than later.
The IRS also announced that about 4 million people may be receiving an unemployment credit. What are the particulars we need to know?
So from the unemployment tax credit, in early 2021, they made some changes. These were under ARPA, the American Rescue Plan Act as well, that gave additional credits to people who were unemployed, likely because of the pandemic, because of COVID-19. So they are making adjustments to tax returns. There are approximately 4 million taxpayers who overpaid on their unemployment that was received. And so the federal government wants to return some of that tax money that was paid out. So ARPA says you can exclude the first $10,200 in unemployment compensation for your 2020 tax return. Again, if you're an individual that's less than $150,000 or a family less than $150,000, then you can get this additional money back. They're going to start these payments on July 14th, and they will continue throughout the summer. So like I said, about 4 million people are eligible to receive these additional unemployment tax credits.
Talking of unemployment makes me think about the changes in individual subsidies or tax credits under ARPA. I understand that unemployed status gets special treatment this year. Please explain what that is along with other changes to help individuals afford and acquire health insurance.
Yes, so ARPA, the American Rescue Plan Act, had an awful lot of things baked into it, and this is another one of those. They changed the tax credits or subsidies that are available. They broadened them for people who are at the low end of the income spectrum, so up to about 150% of the federal poverty level. Those people that are eligible for subsidy aren't going to pay anything to purchase a plan on their state-based exchange or through the federally facilitated marketplace. Also at the top end, so we're all used to a maximum limit of 400% of the federal poverty level, that people that earn 400% or more would not be eligible for the subsidy. But due to the expansion of the subsidies under ARPA, you could get as much as be at 600% of federal poverty level and still get some help with a tax credit or subsidy in the purchase of an individual plan. So those people who purchased a plan in 2021, when these credits were announced, they adjusted for the credits. You were able to go back in and maybe change the plan that you chose. You may be eligible for a greater credit. So all of these adjustments are happening and have been happening, specifically for unemployment. If you were eligible for unemployment at any point in 2020, then you basically get free health insurance in 2021. That will end in 2021. The subsidies that I previously spoke about, those expansions at the lower end and the higher end, will continue into 2022. They could go further if Congress passes a bill to include those, but right now they're set to expire at the end of 2022.
Transparency of hospital costs is effective now. What does this mean? What should we be seeing as a consumer of health services? What can we expect in the future of transparency?
Yes, so transparency has been something that has been talked about an awful lot, and it's important for those of us who are consumers of healthcare, and all of us are in some way or another, whether we are going to the doctor, we're going to the hospital, we need to have an emergency room visit for something. So together, the government, specifically CMS, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, got together and said, we need to share the costs that a hospital would charge to a person that doesn't have insurance. We need to have these posted. We need to allow everybody to be able to take a look at those. So they're doing this in an orderly fashion. So they went to a certain number of hospitals, about 6,000 of them, that need to comply with this rule for the 2021 year. So starting in January, they needed to make all their prices available online in machine-readable format as well, so that consumers and others would be able to go take a look at those postings and have an idea of what their service might cost. So of those roughly 6,000 facilities that were supposed to comply with this rule, only about 5.6% of them are actually doing it. It's a very small amount. So now we have Congress and CMS taking a look at this and saying, how do we force other hospitals to do this? or how do we change our rules so that more will do it? And then the expectation is that as we move forward into 2022, that there are going to be more facilities and more providers that will have to provide this list of their services and the costs, as well as the reimbursements that they receive from the different carriers. So it is supposed to give us as the consumer a lot of information, but right now it doesn't seem to be happening. It's not disclosed, it's not posted. So that is causing Congress and CMS some concern, and they're working on some ways to get that fixed and get more people able to see those from the hospitals.
The future means more change in healthcare. I understand that help is on the way to curb surprise billing. I've also heard a talk of changes to Medicare and Medicaid expansion, ACA changes, and more. Would you please tell us what you're hearing and when we should expect something more definite?
Yes, well, that's a big list there, but I'll try to touch on all of those for you and give you some updates. So first, from the surprise billing perspective, surprise bills are very difficult and hard for consumers to handle. You plan the surgery, you do your best to make sure that the hospital, the doctor that's going to perform the surgery, any aftercare that you need, that you're dealing with in-network hospitals, in-network doctors, but you always have those concerns in certain areas where you can't pick the person that's going to do your anesthesiology. You don't know what doctor is going to be in that emergency room when you are seeking emergency care. You're going to the hospital that's in your network, but is that doctor that you're going to see, are they actually a part of the network? And if they're not, it means those balance bills, those surprise bills that are huge amounts that your insurance carrier is going to pay a small amount of or may not pay anything. So there are some states that have legislation that helps to take care of these. New York has it. New Jersey has it. There are other states that have this, but there are most states in our 50 states that don't have any legislation right now. So the federal government said, let's change this. So they passed and signed a bill at the end of December in 2020 that will create this surprise billing rule, and it will prohibit surprise bills going out to the unknowing consumer of the healthcare. They're starting to craft this legislation. They've sent us out some basic information about what they want to do, who it's going to affect. We haven't seen all of this yet, and there's a lot more that needs to go into this. This is set to take effect in early at the end of December of 2021, so December 27th of 2021, we should have everything ready unless we get some delays. So as more of that comes available to us, we will certainly let you know either in a future podcast or some updated bulletins that we do send out about it. You also asked about Medicare, Medicaid expansion. There are some proposed legislation right now that's being talked about in Congress that would potentially expand Medicare. It would add coverage for vision, for dental, and for hearing. Now, we have to wait for them to pass it, but it's certainly something that those that are on Medicare have looked forward to, because a lot of expenses and a lot of health is affected by your dental care, and of course our eyes get worse as we get older and our hearing is affected as well. So we're all looking forward to that. Medicaid expansion, there are, I believe, a dozen states that still have not taken advantage of the additional amounts for Medicaid expansion. So there is some additional help for those states to say, let's make this happen. Let's get more people insured. And then from the ACA perspective, the subsidies that we talked about a little bit ago in the podcast, the expansion of the lower end and the higher end to give more people the opportunity to get help in the form of the tax credits or subsidies, that is set to expire at the end of 2022 in this current legislation that they're talking about passing, they will confirm those credits that will now become permanent if the legislation would be passed. So we're all anxiously awaiting to see what ends up in the final bill and does it get passed. They're hoping to pass this before we hit the end of July, so we don't have a lot of time left. And certainly whatever they pass, we will update you in bulletin format or in another podcast to let you know actually what does get passed and how it will affect all of us as we move forward.
And finally, back to school soon means fourth quarter will soon be upon us. What can we expect with group health insurance pricing and offerings?
Well, that's the million-dollar question, Jim. I've been watching to see what some of the states are announcing because, yes, we will soon be in fourth quarter. We'll be working on renewals for January 1 effective date. So it depends on the states that you look at. Some of the states are looking at double-digit increases. Some are just under double-digit. I think the big question mark has been what happened because of COVID. And we know that a lot of people preferred to stay home. They didn't want to go to the emergency room. They didn't want to expose themselves to the potential of the virus. And the same thing, people didn't go seek the care that they needed. They weren't getting checkups as they normally did. So how has that affected people getting care now that things are a little bit more opened up? And what are the insurance carriers predicting for next year? So at the national level, looking at places like Kaiser Family Foundation, their estimate is that COVID isn't going to affect these rates very much. It's just going to be trend, the cost of prescription drugs that are increasing and other things. Some particular states are saying that COVID is going to have a bigger effect. So we think overall we're going to see maybe a little bit higher increase than what we've seen in the past, but it could be regional. It could be based on what's been happening in that state. And certainly as we move forward with the pandemic either slowing down or the potential for new variations of the pandemic to hit us, it's definitely going to have a lasting effect with the carriers and the pricing.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. Also, I would like to make the following disclaimer before we end. This podcast is designed to highlight various employee benefit matters of general interest to our listeners. It is not intended to interpret laws or regulations or to address specific client situations. You should not act or rely on any information contained herein without seeking the advice of an attorney or tax professional. So thank you, Shelley, and we hope you found this podcast helpful and informative. If you have any questions, then please contact your account manager or salesperson. Thank you.